Good evening. My name's Richard. I'm just one of the guys like you, a member of the church. And I'm going to be talking and continuing our series on worship in the Bible. I get the great privilege to speak about New Testament, so I've pretty much got a third of the Bible to get through. I plan us to finish up by about midnight. And I kind of thought to start, I was reading this book, if anyone wants to get it, it's a really good 8-part series about the gospel. And what really hit it for me, and it's just a story, but it kind of just really hits off about New Testament worship and faith. And it starts off, imagine early Christians talking to their neighbours in the Roman Empire. Ah, the neighbour says, I hear you're religious. Great, religion's a good thing. Where's your temple or holy place? We don't have a temple, replies the Christian. Jesus is our temple. No temple? But where do your priests work and do their rituals? We don't have priests to meditate or to mediate the presence of God, replies the Christian. Jesus is our priest. No priests? But where do you offer your sacrifices to acquire the favour of your God? We don't need a sacrifice, replies the Christian. Jesus is our sacrifice. What kind of religion is this? Sputters the pagan neighbour. Kind of think that sets the tone, and as I go through, you'll probably start to understand more about that story. And the passage that I'm going to speak about tonight is Romans 12, 1-2, which for me really defines worship in the New Testament. I think Paul was really trying to get at and explain what worship is, and it says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true worship and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So as I speak, I really want you to have this passage at the back of your mind. And before I really start delving into, I guess, kind of what New Testament worship look like, I guess it'd be a good place to start to really define what is worship. And for me, worship is probably something like football fans. Unfortunately, when I did Google football fans, all the English fans and Arsenal fans kind of came up in tears. I don't know why. But for me, this really does depict what worship kind of looks like in most of the parts. They're always passionate. They're always singing, cheering on their team every Saturday. They'll turn up even when their team is going through a 15-run losing streak. They still enter passionate debates with opposing fans, telling them why they're supporting the wrong team. And then when their team wins, oh, that glory feels like heaven. Church probably feels a little bit like that when we come to worship. And if we actually really look at what the word worship means, Tim Armstrong defined that in the first and the series is that originally it came from the Latin word meaning worth-ship. In essence, you provided worth to the thing that you worshipped. It consumed you. That is what worship is. So when you worship something, you're in essence providing worth to that very thing that you worship. And when we start looking at the New Testament and how the early church built that, for me, we really have to look at the change of the worldview. I think if we just think, one day you're worshipping in a temple, your background is as a Jew, and then the next day you're now saying that Jesus is your God. What would worship look like? How would you worship? What's the change? And I guess from just another analogy is, say, for example, if somebody came running into the church today and said, hey, guys, guess what? Jesus is back. He's in Jerusalem, and he's preaching and teaching that everything we're doing is wrong. How would we worship? For me, I genuinely think that we would carry on still doing these traditions that we do today. I would imagine that if that was the case, we'd still come to church here today next week. We'd still sing the songs. We'd still have somebody giving a sermon. And then we'd still have more time for prayer and more worship. And this is exactly what the early church did. From a lot of the historians at the time, one of them being Josephus, he kind of says that the early Jewish converts attended the temple to worship. They still went. their worship pattern initially didn't change. It was only when the Jewish converts got banned from the temple, roughly around about kind of circa 68 to 72 AD, do we actually see that the church starts hitting other buildings and houses. Then they begin the pattern of really trying to understand what does worship look like. And as we can see here on the next slide, there's a gentleman called Flip Schaff who wrote a number of books. It's a very short book, actually, entitled The History of Christianity. It's broken down into 8 volumes. It'll probably take your lifetime to read it, and you still wouldn't understand. But what we see here is that I've kind of broken it down into the Judaism and Christianity faith. And so what we see is worship. Judaism had 7th day for creation. Christianity had the first day for the resurrection. Sacraments, circumcision, Passover, Christianity, baptism, and the Lord's Supper. And what's really interesting is that if you do read Philip Schaff's History of Christianity, he says that initially the church had 2 services back to back. So you'd have one service which was open for everybody, and then service ended, and it was only the baptized who were allowed to go on to the second part of the service, who would then eat what was entitled the Lord's Supper. Festivals, Passover and Pentecost, significant for both, but from a Christianity perspective, they're really celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. Atonement, you've got the bloody sacrifices, Christianity, no longer having to cut up goats in the church. We have Jesus as our eternal sacrifice. Place of worship, temple, Christianity, temple is made without hands, never ceasing worship. And I think that's very important. What we see is that there is some similar aspects. When we actually look at how the early church worshipped as a content, we see that firstly they met together on the first day to commemorate the resurrection. There was a love feast followed by the Lord's Supper, which is what I was talking about, the 2 service acts. Then there was generally a homily delivered, which we see in Acts 20, verse 7. Then they would have letters read from Christians, if they had been passed around. If there wasn't any letters, they would go straight to the Old Testament. Then they would have a collection. Then, I know, gentlemen, hold your horses, kiss of peace. I know most of you would like that reintroduced. Then they would do prayer, followed by songs and psalms, and then confession of faith. And for me, what I see there is almost a legalistic element of worship. And to a certain degree, some of that is sometimes still happening. I think people often are withdrawn and forget what is worship. And I know that we see within the church that most of this was done in people's houses. And I've already mentioned this. This wasn't because it was that's how they defined what worship is, but they didn't have a building. If you remember, Paul went to Corinth and preached in the theatre. The reason he preached in the theatre is because that's what the church meant. The theatre owner opened up his theatre for Christians to come and worship. But what we do notice is a big difference from Old Testament worship to New Testament worship is 2 particular words. First word, I hope I'm going to pronounce this correct, is proskuneo. It occurs 60 times in the New Testament, 57 times in the Gospels alone. And this word literally means to fall down and kiss the ground before the king, or to kiss someone's feet. Its literal definition is probably the best one I've ever heard, which is to kiss like a dog licking his master's hand. How many of us worship like that? And we see these words kind of throughout the New Testament. Firstly, Mark 5, verse 6. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. Again, that word, proskuneo. Luke 24, 50 to 53. When he had led them out of the vicinity of Bethany, he lifted up his hands and blessed them. While he was blessing them, he left them and was taken up in heaven. Then they worshipped him, proskuneo, and returned to Jerusalem with great joy. They stayed continually at the temple, praising God. The second most common word is latruo. This occurs 21 times in the New Testament, and it means to serve. We see it in Luke 4:8. And what's really interesting in this passage is that you see the word proskuneo
as well. So you see, Jesus answered, "It is written, worship, proskuneo, the Lord, and serve him only." Romans 1:9, "God, whom I serve in my spirit in preaching the gospel of his Son, is my witness, how constantly I remember you." And then 2 Timothy 1:3, "I thank God, whom I serve, as my ancestors did, with a clear conscience, as night and day I constantly remember you in my prayers." So what we see the early church really trying to grapple with is proskuneo, latro, sacrifice. So bow down, serve, sacrifice. And actually, if you really think that, if you look through the rest of the New Testament, you literally see that pretty much all the letters are really trying to help the church think through worship. If we remember Galatians, that letter, whilst there's so much teaching, it's really trying to teach the church in Galatia about whether you need to be circumcised or not before you become a Christian. Again, there's elements of worship throughout Corinthians, through the letters of Timothy. It's just all there trying to help churches to really build and focus on what is worship. And life for us here is such an easy place to worship. If we think about what life was like in the first century when you first became a Christian, it was very difficult and very tough. They were continuously persecuted. They were told to don't follow Jesus, walk away from that. And also, most of the New Testament hadn't been written. They had to try and figure everything out for themselves. They would often go back to the Old Testament to really find elements of Jesus throughout. And if we look at the verse in Romans where Paul is saying that we come to worship, we are to be a living sacrifice to the Lord. And this is such a massive ask for each and every one of us. By being a living sacrifice, we are removing the how we worship in the temple to an everyday worship. Because Christianity is not about being held up in a temple. It's not about these four walls. It's about going out into the world to be a shining light of beacon and hope for others. If we do that, we have to sacrifice ourselves daily. And just remember, when Jesus died in the temple, the curtain tore in two. This means that God's spirit and presence left the temple, and that we ourselves are the temple. God's Holy Spirit dwells in us. The second part of Paul's verse in Romans 12, 1-2, so verse 2, gives a warning also not to conform to the world around us. We have to make sure that we do not conform to the world around us, and it's so much easy, you know, there's so much going on, and it's very easy, in particular in London, to get caught up and to really focus on money, sex, power, materials, whatever else that looks like, and to really forget the bigger picture in life and what is our calling. And most importantly, the need to sacrifice daily, to worship daily. This is what, in essence, the New Testament leaders called their congregations to do in worship. Bow down, serve, sacrifice. So my challenge for each and every one of us this week is to evaluate what we worship. And my advice is probably to start with your bank balances, because where your money goes is probably what you're worshiping the most. But also evaluate, when tough times hit, what do you turn to? Do you turn to Jesus, or do you turn to drink? Do you turn to money? Do you turn to work? These, again, are other elements that play on to what is going on in our heart. We have to evaluate what we do daily and question ourselves. Are we bowing down to Jesus? Are we serving him? And are we sacrificing our lives and what we want for Jesus' desire? Because if we worship how Jesus wants us and expects us to worship, we will see a lot of change, not just in our lives, but in the lives around us. The early church was called to share the good news of Jesus. It wasn't meant to be inward focusing. It was a call for people to go out into the world and point people to Jesus. For me, this is what worship is. It's following Jesus where he calls you to point people to Jesus. It's not about just turning up on a church, singing a few hymns, having a prayer, and then pursuing money on Monday to Saturday. It's about sacrificing yourselves daily to Jesus. Worship does not only happen here in the church. It's not just about singing songs and praying. Whilst these are important, the biggest element, again, is just bowing down to the greatness of Jesus and following him. And if I'm honest, this worship will probably consume your lives. It's going to be exceptionally demanding, but that is what Jesus wants. That is our desire. And yet through that, so much more joy, passion, and amazingness will happen through following Jesus. Jesus didn't come down to earth to create a religion. He came down to earth to deconstruct religion and rebuild it the way that it should be built. So my advice is read, reread, reread, reread the Gospels. Learn how Jesus worshipped. And then when you do, make sure you bow down, you serve and sacrifice. I just want to end by sharing a story of that I think really defines this bowing down, worshipping and serving as well as sacrificing. And it was done by this lady here called Linda Wilson Allen. And this came from the San Francisco Chronicle. There was an article about her on the front page. And here's the story. She is a bus driver. So it goes. On the front page, San Francisco. She loves people who ride her bus. She knows the regulars. She learns their names. She'll wait for them if they're late and then make up the time on her route. A woman in her 80s named Ivy had some heavy grocery bags and was struggling with them. So Linda got out of her bus and helped Ivy with the grocery bags onto the bus. Now Ivy lets all the other buses pass her stop just so she can ride Linda's bus. Linda saw a woman named Tanya in the bus shelter. She could immediately tell that Tanya was new to the area. She could tell she was lost. It was almost Thanksgiving, so Linda went up to her and said, "You're all out here by yourself. You don't know anybody. Come on over for Thanksgiving and kick it with me and the kids. They're now friends." The reporter who wrote the article rides Linda's bus every day. He said Linda has built such a little community of blessing on that bus that passengers often offer Linda the use of vacation homes. They bring her potted plants and floral bouquets. And when people found out she likes to wear scarves as an accessory, they started buying them her scarves as presents. And let's just think for a moment of what a thankless task it is to be a bus driver in our world. Cranky passengers, engine breakdowns, traffic jams, get them on your seats. You ask yourself, how does she have this amazing attitude? Well, her mood is set at 2:30 a.m. when she gets down on her knees and prays for 30 minutes. She says that there's a lot to talk about with the Lord. And when she gets to the end of a line, she always says, "That's all. I love you. Take care." Have you ever heard a bus driver telling you, "I love you"? People wonder, where can I find the kingdom of God? Well, I'll tell you where you can find the kingdom of God. You can find it on the number 45 bus riding through San Francisco. People wonder, where can I find the church? Again, I can tell you, it's behind that metro vehicle in San Francisco. So as I invite the band back up, I was kind of praying about this sermon, and there was a number of kind of areas that touched me, and I'm going to slightly rejig things up. So go with me. I'm hoping this is going to work. If you feel anything that I pray about, or not pray about, anything that I'm going to share now that you would like prayer for, can you come to the front and I'll kind of offer prayer. There's still going to be prayer and prayer team over there, but I would like to pray for these individuals that kind of feel that it's one of those. So first one is that you don't really feel that your lives are this living sacrifice that I've described, and that you're kind of struggling, whether that's with idolatry or various other issues, but you really want to be sacrificing your lives daily for Jesus. Those that want to be, I guess, the shining beacon of hope for people in hard times and difficult times. And then finally, for people in work, university, that they just really want to bring Jesus to their place of work or even to their place of university. I'm just going to, whilst the band kind of start getting ready, if you want to kind of step forward, and I will happily pray for you.